More on probably one of the most chilling things we've run across on this program, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute of Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of our Institute, my fellow analyst, and good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Still disturbed over this particular topic. This is a very disturbing topic, and we will not kid you that you're not going to hear too much joking in here today because there's nothing to laugh about.
No, that's not. What we're talking about and what we were talking about yesterday, if you joined us yesterday, is a new article that has been released in the Journal of Medical Ethics. The article was by two researchers by the name of Alberto Ghibellini and Francesca Minerva. The article was entitled, Afterbirth Abortion, Why Should the Baby Live? In it, these two medical ethicists and philosophers have set a case, and one we think is extremely flimsy and full of presuppositional errors and logical loopholes, that says that there's really no difference between a preborn child and a newborn. And so therefore, if we believe it's okay to abort before the child comes out of the womb, why should we feel any different? And they advocate for abortions after birth, up to a point where, and Chuck and I, we talked about this yesterday, very vague and loophole-filled definition of potential person, and only after there's some self-cognition of value in the person that they can express, that would be the only point where it would be morally unethical to end their lives. You know, I wanted to unpack this a little bit more. Both these researchers are from Melbourne, Australia. They were trained in England, but they're both now in Australia. In January, gave a talk at their Oxford Center for Practical Ethics entitled, What's the Problem with Euthanasia? So you see, these folks are saying, we're going to carry it to its extremely logical end that if you don't have the cognition of your value on the front end, you can be killed. And if you get to later in life and society can't see any reason why you have any value, i.e. you're not productive, and we've heard this argument before, and you're an older person, what's wrong with euthanizing you and taking you out of the mix? Chuck, honestly, they're equal opportunity killer wannabes in this field. So
here's the bad part, Barry. These are academics.
Yes, they are.
So basically what they are doing is discussing this from a quote-unquote theoretical perspective. It's really no big deal to them. I think, honestly, what we need to do is hand these two the tools to do the job and say, if you think it's okay, then you go do it. You do the injection on the old person. You give them the potassium chloride injection. You run the pump on the abortion machine. Let's see you do it. Oh, yeah, and a newborn? Right. Let's see you do the potassium chloride injection. I'll be quite honest. I don't think these academics have the stomach for it. The reason I don't think they have the stomach for it is because I think they know that they're lying through their teeth. They have basically made this argument up. They would force someone else to do the actual job of killing infants and old people and the preborn. And because they can sit in their ivory tower and justify it to other people and get grants from places who want to be able to do it for a profit, they think they're immune and that all they have done is really just provided this philosophical underpinning. And the fact is what they have done, yes, they have merely provided the philosophical underpinning, and it's all based on false philosophy. That's the bad part. Essentially, they are no better, they're not even slightly better than the actual abortionist or the person who would take the life of an elder person for that particular reason. And in fact, this kind of ethic, quote unquote, this has nothing to do with ethics except possibly an anti-ethical, is starting to creep in places like Holland, which first started out that you could choose to die, and then it moved over to people who were quote unquote vegetative, and then now it's moving over to people who are a burden on younger folks. It's beginning to creep, and people like these say that's okay. It's okay to kill grandma because she's inconvenient. You have to take her to the grocery store, you have to take her to the doctor. Well, she can't take care of herself anymore, and she doesn't quite have everything that she had before. Let's play God and decide when the exact date of her demise is. And then we can be free of these burdens to live our lives and just have a great time. Until, of course, we ourselves possibly get a little senile, can't get around by ourselves, then we lived in abject fear because we know that we did that. And what's to stop our offspring who watched us do it to us? That's what everybody forgets.
Right. Because, you know, the old saying is true. What goes around comes around.
Barry, that's the bad part. Nobody is thinking in those terms. What if you and I were hired by some kind of an ethics group to come up with reasons why college professors who sit in the ivory tower and come up with bad ethical arguments aren't really persons? They've abrogated their personhood by coming up with these bad arguments. I'm sure you and I could make a grand philosophical case using the same kind of equivocation these people have used and the same kind of rhetorical trickery, this rhetorical sleight of hand that they've raised, to prove not only that these ivory tower quote-unquote ethicists who propose the murdering of infants and old people are no longer persons and should themselves be subject to, well, gosh, in fact, let's make a case that they can be hunted because of their non-personhood. We can have the state issue hunting licenses. You can laugh at this or be shocked, but what I'm saying is we would never do that because the definitions that we would have to come up with are just as arbitrary and just as pulled out of a hat as the reasons that they give to kill babies and old people. It's contrived, Barry. It's completely made up.
And the farther you get away from a standard of absolute morality and absolute truth, which is the only place you're going to find that is in God's word in the scriptures, the farther you get away from that, the more creative you have to become in trying to keep all the balls in the air. And so your definitions become almost, by definition, illogical. We're starting to argue what real persons versus potential persons are because we want to move an arbitrary boundary line, which is not arbitrary at all. God has said very clearly that I have known you from in the womb and from the moment of he brings it together for the conception of a child, that is a person. We are running headlong into a clash of worldviews, Charles. On the one hand, we have those who believe the fact that there is such a thing as absolute truth. There is a sovereign superintending God of the universe, and that he has standards of which they are there also to give dignity and value to his creation, to human beings, regardless of their point on the spectrum, whether from its conception or whether it's in the end of their days, versus a worldview that says that man wants to be the sovereign supreme master, but only so many men and only those who have intellectually brought themselves above everybody else and become their betters, and they will be the ones who will define truth. And as a matter of fact, I thought it was interesting because in the article that we found this issue about this study in, the professor, who is the editor of the journal, a professor Julian Savulescu of the Journal of Medical Ethics, he went on record to say, and I just thought this was probably the most telling thing in the entire article, says, quote, "The goal of the Journal of Medical Ethics is not to present the truth or promote some one moral view. It is to present well-reasoned argument based on widely accepted premises." I'm sorry, Charles. I didn't realize that it was widely accepted in society that when a baby's born, it's not really a person until at some point when everybody says, oh, okay, he stopped being a nuisance, so therefore he's not a person. It's just absolutely stunning. But he did say it right. Obviously, the goal of the Journal of Medical Ethics is not to present the truth.
If you'll notice in the article, truth has a capital T.
Yes, it does. So they understand what truth they're talking about.
That's exactly right. They know this is a tacit admission that they have cut free from the tether that binds them to the anchor of the truth. And by the truth, I mean Jesus Christ, who said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but by me." They know exactly that they are cutting that tether to the truth, and that truth being Jesus Christ and the Father, or promote some one moral view. Now, get this at the end of this. It is to present well-reasoned argument. well reasoned. Barry, you made a statement earlier that we're getting away from logic. This has turned logic on its head.
Yes, it has.
Because logic is an attempt to get at truth. And yes, what these people are saying is we are turning our back on truth and walking away from it in favor of an ethic based on widely accepted premises.
Which is the tyranny of the majority, Charles. What they're basically saying is we're going to totally democratize everything, including medical ethics.
You and I both know where that has led in the past. Think about the most prominent example, and I don't want to invoke Godwin's law here. And if you don't know what Godwin's law is, it's the old saying that in an argument, the first one who raises the name of Adolf Hitler or makes a comparison to Hitler has invoked Godwin's law. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm using a true historical example to illustrate a point. And because you could also point to Stalin's genocide in the Ukraine. The way that was done, especially in Germany, was to get the masses to believe that Jews especially and other non-quote-unquote Aryan races were not really human. And once a majority of people had been convinced of that, you can convince them that, therefore, it's okay to rob them and eventually imprison them and eventually kill them. This is exactly the attempt these two quote-unquote ethicists are attempting here. This is an attempt to build an ethic not on truth, but on democracy.
Yes.
Because democracy does not equal truth.
And we're finding that out more and more as those who would cling to a pure democracy in all things, in all areas of life, are really starting to show their hand. Chuck, I do believe that we're coming to a point where there's becoming a crystal clear polarization between those two competing worldviews, the worldview of the Christian faith and the worldview of the world, which is in rebellion to Christ.
Barry, I'm dumbfounded by the arguments that these people have made. For instance, Professor Savulescu said this to the London Daily Telegraph. This debate has been an example of, quote, which ethics? And debate is in quotes, too. A group of people know who the witch is and seek to burn her. It is one of the most dangerous human tendencies we have. It leads to lynching and genocide. Mm-hmm. Rather than UN engage, there is a drive to silence and, in the extreme, kill based on their own moral certainty. That is not the sort of society we should live in. Barry, this is the most ridiculous statement I have ever heard.
No, Chuck, it's not ridiculous. That was well planned. He's trying to say that anybody who would oppose them is a persecutor.
Okay. So
therefore, he's begging for an emotional defense for something that's indefensible.
Okay, but what question does this beg, Barry? What question is the arguer begging here?
Which one? I mean, he's begging a number of them.
I'll tell you what he's saying.
What are you looking at?
He's saying that those who have moral certainty are bigots. Or they would lynch people.
They're lynch people and they're on a witch hunt, yes.
What exactly, when he makes this statement, is he claiming for himself? He's claiming a form of moral certainty.
Yes, that's right.
And what he is proclaiming is that his moral certainty leads him to be able to, if you will, lynch and commit genocide against the unborn and the elderly. So this is the pot calling the kettle black. This is the murderer saying, look over there, all those people over there, they're the ones who forced me to do it. Or, you horrible ethicists, I didn't like this person, and they did not come in within the bounds of my personal ethics, and therefore I killed them. Who are you to say that I shouldn't be allowed to kill them? Barry, this is just such a flawed, bad, terrible argument. And yet, people will applaud this as some kind of an advance in bioethical thinking.
You know, Chuck, I really wish that we could, similar to how these two authors had put it, find that they are morally irrelevant. Just as they believe that newborn children and young babies are morally irrelevant, I would really like to believe that, so I choke on the name, that Savulescu...
Giubbolini.
Giubbolini. Yeah, okay, I can never pronounce that correctly. Giubbolini, Savulescu, and Minerva would be morally irrelevant.
Yes. Well, with that, we're out of time. join us tomorrow. I think we've done about all we can do without becoming physically ill on this particular subject.
Yeah.
So join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.